Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Beautiful day. Just a beautiful day outside, and hope everybody is enjoying it. A little bit cooler than the past weekend, so yeah, enjoy this. We welcome you into the Tuesday Drive. It's Bill and Dan in the studio today. Drew is needed elsewhere, so Dan has got the controls, and we'll get things started here shortly with a conversation as we have each week with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Auburn, of course, coming off a big win in their home opener against Ball State, 42-3. And South Alabama is up next, 11:45 this Saturday morning. It is homecoming for the Tigers as they host the Jaguars this coming Saturday morning. Auburn practiced today. There was a media viewing opportunity. Dan had a chance to watch a little of that. We'll talk about that as well as we head on into the show here this afternoon. We'd love for you to join in. We will open up our phone lines after our time with the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, and get your thoughts, questions, comments as well. We are back in the studio. First time we've been here in nearly a week.
Yeah, you know, how about a big thanks on, and hello, Bill, a big thanks to our pals at Sensegreen for the Plaza remote.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, Skybar and Franklin Tire and Auto have been longtime friends of the show as well, and we'll be back at those locations again very soon. But really appreciate being able to take the show on the road the last couple of days.
Yeah, it's been nice. But yes, great to be back in the studio on this Tuesday afternoon. And as I mentioned, right off the top, we're going to check in with the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, how are you doing today?
Bill, Dan, I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. Good to be with you today. Good to be getting ready for a homecoming Saturday and then start a Southeastern Conference play in about a week and a half. How about that?
And Andy, and what a home opener, not just from what you saw on the field, but I thought from an atmosphere standpoint, I know Auburn, you know, has put together a video of the start of the fourth quarter that's made the rounds on social media and you know, become something that a lot of other fan bases on Saturday night.
Well, that is intentional. I mean, that is something they've worked on for quite some time with regard to the new lights, lasers, just the atmosphere of a nighttime game at Jordan-Hare Stadium. It's interesting, and guys, I mean, you've been around it a while, as I have. You know, it used to be you wanted that 2:30 game. That 2:30 game was the game that you wanted, and that was the, you know, that meant that CBS was in town. It was the primetime game. And it seems it's a little bit different for
yeah.
me now.
Oh, yeah.
I think Auburn prizes that nighttime game. I think the students love the nighttime game and the atmosphere and the comments that we get from coaches that are coming in for nighttime. Enjoy that. That has changed. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, I agree, Andy. You were breaking up just a little bit. But, yeah, there's no question that now the preferred time is that night game. And, you know,
although I thought the day game environments last year were top-notch, too. Like, I totally think that there's some extra juice. But even, I mean, I think about those early season games against Cal and Oklahoma and Arkansas last year, even Vandy late in the season. Like, they weren't night games. Still a top-notch atmosphere, and that sellout streak is something to be proud of in an era of college football, again, where
A lot of schools aren't selling out.
No, there were. I mean, you can pick some top 25 teams this weekend that played a G5 program or an FCS school, and they got some folks wondering where all the fans were.
Well, let's just be blunt about it. I mean, it is not as though Auburn has been a playoff team of late, but this will be the 17th straight sellout this Saturday morning at 11:47. It will tie the Auburn record for most consecutive sellouts, and then obviously Auburn will break that mark when Georgia comes to town in October. And all of that to say, hats off to the Auburn family. Hats off to Auburn and folks continuing to support this program in spite of the fact that it hasn't had its best seasons of late. I think that's what makes this even more remarkable, this spring of sellouts that I think we'll see continue, and we'll continue to break that mark with every home game that Auburn plays this season.
Yeah, it was so exciting to see the crowd, feel the atmosphere that there was. And look, let's face it, the fact that Auburn won at Baylor sure didn't hurt. As you know, fans excited about this team, they want to see what this young team does and how, you know, how some of the new faces are going to perform. And thus far, it's been pretty good, you know, from what we've seen from all the newcomers.
Well, that win against Baylor on that Friday night a week and a half ago looks even better today.
No kidding.
In light of what Baylor did going on the road to SMU, which was a playoff team a year ago, and putting up the same kind of passing numbers that Sawyer Robertson did against Auburn. But then also, I mean, Bill, he threw for 440 yards last week in that two overtime win. But they also ran for over 180 yards as a team against SMU in that double overtime win. They didn't come close to doing that against Auburn.
No.
And then Auburn turns around in last week, and granted, that was not a good Ball State offense that Auburn faced. And yet, if you're playing air, it's tough to hold a team to -3 yards rushing in the game. And Auburn, with time and time again, with you know, the time that Auburn spent in the backfield. And Auburn right now has the best rushing defense in the Southeastern Conference. It's among the very best in the country. Auburn has 10 sacks after two games. A lot of those came last week. A lot of those tackle for losses came last week against Ball State. With that said, guys, though, Auburn will get a better test this week from South Alabama. I'm convinced of that.
Yeah, South, you know, of course, they played in they've been to, I believe, three straight bowl games. You know, folks may remember a couple of years back them just absolutely dominating Oklahoma State. I mean, it is a program they're coming in here, you know, going to do their best to see if they can pull off a huge upset like South Florida did in Gainesville last week.
There are a ton of players for South Alabama, both offensively and defensively, that you've got to think would have loved to be playing at Auburn or Alabama at some point of their career. And they're not. And this is an opportunity to come in against one of the big boys in this state and a chance to knock them off. It's a chance to play the team that perhaps they wanted to play for and maybe did not get the opportunity.
In this era of college football, Andy, consider this, that you might still be able to work your way to that level.
Absolutely.
and games like the one South Alabama's about to play against Auburn, like those, I mean, you think about when Auburn recruited Sun Belt players that ended up mattering for Hugh Freeze, including Kieron Crawford this season, but Jalen McLeod before that. I mean, they had impressive games against the SEC as Sun Belt players, and I think, if you're a South Alabama player in the portal at the end of the season, not that that's the only thing to play for or even something that should necessarily be top of mind on Saturday, but if you put together a strong game, that could be important if you want to switch teams in the portal, because teams will look at what you did against an SEC team and think this is someone with something special.
I listened to Major Applewhite's press conference from yesterday, And that team is looking forward to Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
That team is looking forward to coming to Jordan-Hare Stadium. Mm-hmm. That team is looking forward to playing Auburn for the first time in school history. And you know what? Hats off to Auburn, because Auburn will play these schools.
Right. There are a lot of
these schools in this state. And mm-hmm. there are others in this state that absolutely refuse to do that.
That is right.
Not the Auburn Tigers.
Not good. The
Auburn Tigers. And you know what? Butch Thompson does it in baseball. The Malvos do the same thing as softball. Mm-hmm. Bruce Pearl has played all over this state as well. Hats off to Auburn and women's basketball as well for playing all of these schools in the state of Alabama.
Andy, any standouts from either side of the ball through two games, but I think especially after that Ball State game, I got a question up about Sylvester. Xavier Atkins has earned a lot of attention. There are a couple players that and maybe not necessarily the guys that we thought we were going to be talking about a lot who have commanded attention through 2 weeks.
Well, Sylvester Smith played a much better game in game two than he did in game one, and he was challenged after game one, and I thought he responded with five tackles and a tackle for loss. Xavier Atkins has set a career high in tackles in his first two games, five tackles apiece in his first two games for Auburn. 10 tackles, four tackles for loss, two sacks for the transfer from LSU. I know you guys, we've talked about Kieron Crawford and what he has done. 11 tackles, leads Auburn. He leads Auburn with three tackles for loss and three sacks. He is taking advantage of the opportunity he's given after that transfer from Arkansas State. That's just a couple of the guys offensively. Will we see Champ Anthony out there? Apparently he was at practice. I was not there today, but apparently he was at practice today. He has the injured hand with the broken thumb that has been surgically repaired. He was at practice and I guess has some kind of system, cast system, something.
He's rocking I was at practice and he's rocking the Senderic. Yeah. He's rocking the Senderic marks. Okay.
Do we see Champ? And if it is, he's out there a week earlier than I thought.
Yeah.
He would be out there for Auburn. So.
NAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. And, we briefly lost our connection there with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, got him back. And Andy, I think we were sort of in the middle of talking about some of the guys that have stood out here early on. We were talking about Champ Anthony.
Yeah, we just finished talking about Champ's club,
right? But yeah.
I'll be interested to see if he plays on Saturday.
Yeah,
it might not be bad to get him back out there before Auburn heads to Oklahoma in a week.
Now, a couple of guys. I again, would probably be a little surprised if Damari Alston plays, since he's in a non-contact jersey. And you'd really like to have him as full speed as possible when it comes time for Oklahoma. No, you're not going to have Darrell Robinson for this week. So that means Omar Mabson is going to have to step up. Because Jeremiah Cobb is the number one guy right now at running back.
Although the fact they used Jeremiah almost exclusively until the game was out of reach against Ball State, makes me.
But he wasn't overworked. He only had 11 carries.
No, and it was one of his best games in an Auburn uniform.
It was his best game. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was easily the best game that he's had in an Auburn uniform. I kind of go back and forth on Damari. And I think that's a fluid situation. I don't get the impression they're looking to hold him out this week. And I think especially since the medical condition with Darrell and the fact that he's probably out for a while,
right?
As best I understand it, because of the incision that they had to take in his hip to relieve the blood that had collected on his hip. So, I don't know how long he's out at this point. And I know that Damari was out in a yellow jersey at practice today. I'm hoping to get out to practice tomorrow, get maybe a little more clarity on that. But it was good to see Jeremiah have the game that he did against Ball State
mm-hmm.
on Saturday. And listen, Hugh Freeze has been talking about Jeremiah since fall camp, that he thought of his tailbacks, the guy that could have the biggest breakthrough potentially was Jeremiah. Listen, they knew what they had in Damari, and they believe he is their most complete back in pass pro, out of the backfield as a receiver, and running the football, all of that. But Jeremiah has that extra gear, and we saw it twice in that ball game on Saturday night against Ball State. I was happy to see Jeremiah have the game he did. Talking with Coach last night on Tiger Talk, of course on Wings 94.3 last night, and talking about Omar Mavson. And I don't think that they don't have a concern about Omar running the football. They believe that he has the ability to do that even as young as he is. And I asked him last night specifically, so is it the pass pro that gives you the most concern? He said, yes, but. And pass pro is a concern, but also reading properly and getting the checks from a guy like Connor Liu and making the right read as a tailback. And I think that just comes with experience. But like we said last week, going into Ball State, I think it means more carries, possibly, for Jeremiah, more carries for Omar Mavson. They even talked a little bit about Alvin Henderson yesterday. And whether we see Alvin get his first carry in an Auburn uniform this Saturday against South Alabama. So all of those questions, who's Auburn's place kicker?
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up, Andy.
Alex McPherson.
Yeah.
Alex, I think they believe around the 40-yard mark and in, he's good. Beyond that, it's got to be someone else, and it sounds to me, and he talked about it yesterday, guys, we were all either watching or at the presser yesterday, and then he mentioned it last night on Tiger Talk. There's an open competition now, basically between Towns McGoo and Connor Gibbs as the kickoff guy, and Gibbs was perfect.
He really was really good as a kickoff
guy after Towns' injured ankle, did not have an opportunity to kick a field goal, so I think that is still up in the air at this point. But doggone, wouldn't we all like to have that put to bed before Auburn goes back on the road and starts Southeastern Conference play in a week and a half.
A couple of notes from practice today that would correspond to what you were saying, Andy. I think with running back, Damari, like you said, in the non-contact, in the yellow jersey, I thought it was interesting that Henderson was still with the scout team today and not working with the running backs, which makes me wonder me wonder if Justin Jones is your number three, and they feel like this week at least – Jeremiah, Omar, and Justin could handle the load if Damari can't go, and like Coach said, game time decision there. Mm-hmm. There was a moment in practice, because I was watching Jason Ferguson, and I were all watching the kickers really closely between drills. One moment where, all right, let's simulate some big time pressure. I think they even pumped in some crowd noise, had the whole team around making some noise. Felt like an opportunity for Connor Gibbs to win the job right there, and he pushed it a little bit wide.
You know what I wonder?
Big time leg.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But I mean, you can see it. But I think they were, I think they were trying to simulate some situations where maybe I think if Auburn had to attempt a 45-yarder on Saturday, my guess is Connor Gibbs would get the first look.
I'm wondering, guys, if we're seeing it all across the country, and I'm wondering if you might see it from Auburn. Just going for it a little more on fourth down when you get to what used to be that long field goal range. Looking at a lot, there's so many metrics now, and a lot of the numbers would tell you to go for it instead of trying a long field goal.
Or even punt with this defense.
We saw it at Baylor.
Yes.
Fourth and one in the 27-yard touchdown run by Jackson Arnold that put that game away in years past with a healthy Alex McPherson. I think he's out there kicking the field goal at that point.
Well, if you're getting a push from the
Auburn this year.
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting a push from the offensive line and you feel like you can get four or five yards, it makes you think much more about the odds of missing a field goal, giving the other team better field position, and going for it. Because if you don't make it, they're still going to get that field position there. But if you do make it, you might get seven points.
And down and distance matter. But I would think that you would even, if you don't know what your – beyond 40-yard field goal.
Yeah, if you don't have any confidence of making anything outside the 25-yard line.
I mean, maybe you feel like Hudson can pin guys deep, too. Like Hudson can you know, at that point with your defense, you know, Hudson can, depending on how long of a fourth down conversion we're talking about, maybe you're thinking, yeah, you know what, let's use the punter to try to put guys inside the 10.
But it's crazy. I mean, I'm just looking around at in so many games that I've watched here in the first couple of weeks. You know, it used to be Lane Kiffin would do that. It's like, yeah, Lane's going to go for it on fourth down an awful lot. But there are a lot of teams that now are going for it on fourth down because now their book tells them the odds are better, you know, more in favor of making that first down than making a long field goal. So it'll be interesting to see.
Baylor did it all night against Auburn.
They did, and they did it last week against SMU.
We were talking about this off the air, but the team Florida beat in week one, Andy, Long Island, they had an opponent last week that went for it on fourth and one at their own 14, down four early in the fourth quarter.
And
didn't get it, but like it was just, I mean, like, you know, I think we're seeing some coaches get, and maybe it's the, you know, maybe that's what the computer numbers say you should do, but there's, we're seeing some real gambles on fourth down that would have made, you know, Tommy Tuberville wouldn't have believed what people are doing these days a couple of decades ago.
And he was known as the Riverboat Gambler.
Yes, that's right.
Yes, he was.
Oh, my. It is homecoming Saturday for the early kickoff against South Alabama. So that means an early start for everybody, including you guys.
Yeah, we're on the air at 8:30 Saturday morning. So I'll be getting to the ballpark about 6:15 on Saturday. But that also gives us an earlier time to get home and enjoy the rest of college football that day. But, it's South Alabama in town. They're going to bring some folks.
Yes, they will.
It's a sellout crowd. It may take a while to get warmed up, so to speak, from a fan perspective in this one. This is really an important game for Auburn. It's a much better opponent that Auburn faces this week. I think this is a very good tune-up for Southeastern Conference play, which starts next week at 2:30 at Oklahoma. So, we're on the air at 9. I'm sorry, not at 8:30. We're on the air at 9. I'm still going to be there about 6:15 on Saturday. But looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing South Alabama at Jordan-Hare Stadium. And I applaud Auburn because Auburn does reach out to these schools, and they've done it all over the state. Schools have been in to Jordan-Hare Stadium, and not everybody does that. But Auburn does, and I think it's good for Auburn. I think it's good for the state. It's certainly good for those schools that are coming in as well here to Jordan-Hare State.
Oh, no question about it. Might as well keep the money in state and support those schools. As you said, you know, it sometimes takes a little bit to get going, but there's going to be another sellout crowd, and you don't want to. I mean, it's one thing that, you know, Hugh Freeze, DJ Durkin, the staff don't want to have a letdown, don't want to have one of those, really sloppy games where it's obvious that you're looking ahead. So, I mean, if they can get out there and take care of business, that's what they want as they get ready to head into SEC play in Norman.
Good offense that comes in South Alabama. Kentrell Bullock, who transferred from Ole Miss, has 254 yards in rushing and 3 touchdowns. Derek Boysen, a grad student out of Crestview, Florida, has 3 touchdowns, 15 catches for 221 yards. It's a good athletic quarterback. And Bishop Davenport, who transferred in from Utah State. It's a big offensive line. Their offensive line, just in the numbers standpoint, is as big as Auburn's offensive line coming in. I like their linebackers are very, very active for South Alabama. They will have no trouble getting up to play at Jordan-Hare Stadium on Saturday. And playing in a stadium like this is nothing new for South Alabama. So if you think that, I just don't think this is going to be another game like we saw last week with Ball State and Auburn just dominated in every facet of that game. This, I think, is a much tougher opponent Auburn this Saturday with the Jaguars coming to town.
I expect them to be very aggressive, both offensively and defensively.
Not sure you can use this. Not sure you can use this on the broadcast, Andy. But Drew Forehand went to Crestview High School. So if you want to, if you want to mention, there's since since producer Drew, we don't get a lot of Crestview mentions on the.
And there's some Auburn. I mean, there's some Auburn ties on this coaching staff. That have been here.
Trey Williams, right?
Trey Williams. Yeah, Trey Williams is one of those guys. There's a couple guys that have worked for Hugh Freeze.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a Petrino in the ballpark.
Yeah, Paul.
Is the offensive coordinator for Major Applewhite, who has been here as well
part
of that Alabama staff. So there are some interesting ties for Saturday's ball game, to be sure, both on and off the field.
Yeah, looking forward to it, Andy. Again, as Andy's saying, 9 o'clock is the airtime over on Wings, following the 7 o'clock game day on Wings show. Good for them. That's not all that's going on. There's quite a bit going on with the Auburn Network. You've got a great Talking Tigers podcast with Mayo Sowell up right now. What else is what's coming up?
It's a fascinating story with Mayo. I've kind of previewed that for the last couple of weeks and what he has done and what he has done with his life since leaving Auburn and spending time in prison and now a pastor in Atlanta and the work that he's doing and that church is doing with the homeless in Atlanta. That's the current Talking Tigers podcast. Monday, we tackle the NIL issue. And it's not a real flashy podcast, but there's a ton of meat to this podcast. Brett Whiteside, who's Auburn's deputy athletic director for player management, and Cannon Gaines, who's on our staff with Playfly. He's the director of Playfly Max. We talk about as much as we can in 35 minutes of the nuts and bolts of NIL and how much that changes and what Auburn is doing in the NIL world, not only in football, guys, but across the athletics landscape. I'm really looking forward to tomorrow afternoon. I'm going to get to spend some time with Pat Dye Jr. A couple years ago, and I never had the chance to watch him coach or to meet Shug Jordan. And so we had his son, Ralph Jordan Jr., on the podcast to hear some stories about his father. I did have the great pleasure and privilege to get to work with Coach Dye. In those last couple of years with Coach Dye, I got to do his pre and his post game show. And then, we even worked together when he was doing his outdoor show together. And so I got to spend a little time with him. And of course, this past weekend was the Pat Dye reunion game. And I think they had over 200
that was great
former players and staff in, and, including Pat Dye Jr. And he and I are going to sit down tomorrow and just talk about, the impact of his father. And so I'm really looking forward to that. And then in a couple of weeks, you get to meet someone who is really integral to Auburn's volleyball program. Auburn plays Virginia 5:30 this evening over at Neville Arena. Rachel Corbelli is Auburn's associate head coach and comes from an incredible volleyball family of coaches. So those are the Talking Tigers podcast coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Looking forward to those, Andy. Again, we really appreciate every opportunity we have to spend a little time with you, and look forward to seeing you over at the stadium on Saturday morning.
Bright and early, baby. Bright and early.
I hear you.
I look forward to these guys. Have a great one today. War Eagle.
Voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us as he does on Tuesdays.
He's just the best.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. All right. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Going to open up the phone lines. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcast. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center, or use the go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron.
So come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
drive.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we'd love for you to join in. You know, we were talking about the kicking situation there, and that is something that could be huge. I mean, we've talked about it last year with all the problems Auburn had in the red zone last year. Had they been able to make a few more field goals, Auburn could have had a winning season. Auburn could have won 7 or 8 games last year.
And I still think Auburn in the red zone feels pretty good about
their ability to make field goals. I think they feel better about their situation this year than they did a year ago.
The problem now is that when you're on the fringe of, I mean,
just outside the red zone.
And there are games where, you know, you really want to finish, I mean, obviously you want to finish drives with touchdowns, but if a drive stalls out,
at the 30-yard line?
Exactly. You'd like to be able to know that you can still finish the drive with points. Mm-hmm. And right now, I don't think Auburn...
I don't know that they have confidence that they're going to be able to get points with a field goal.
You know,
45-plus.
I think Connor Gibbs's leg was impressive when he was called into action.
Very. I mean, that's as good a kick, good kickoffs as we've seen in a long time.
But watching him kick a couple of field goals today, Bill, he's the wild thing, right?
Well, he's got
a lot of power, but you don't know exactly where it's going. And while they could still call on him to try something huge, I still think it's, you know, they didn't necessarily get the answer. At least from the part of practice we got to watch, I don't think they necessarily got the answers that they were hoping for from him, which is, you know, I think they, you know, there's an opportunity for him to carve out a role in the kicking game right now, and hopefully Auburn can get that figured out, because it is, it's an adventure right now when you get beyond when you get beyond point blank range for Alex, it becomes iffier and iffier the further you get from.
Yeah.
From the goal line, and that's something Auburn, you hope it doesn't, you know, in one of these, you know, in an SEC slate that looks like you're going to be
in a tight game where it's absolutely critical. I will be really interested to see this week, because hopefully, you know, against USA, you're scoring enough points, but if you get around the 30-yard line, I'd almost like to see. All right, let's see how one of these guys. Let's see how Connor does if you put him out there, because looking at his bio, he was 10 of 13 for Southern Miss last year with a long of, and yes, he has a strong leg, a long of 59.
Yeah,
so he's got a strong leg.
It was and he had, even on the ones he missed in front of the media today. I mean, it wasn't necessarily that they were falling short. It was that he was pushing them left and right, which you know, is at least feels like that's a more fixable problem than the ball's not getting there.
Oh yeah,
right. So that's right. That doesn't necessarily
you've
mean
got that, the distance. You just try to hone the range.
Doesn't mean you're going to fix it by Saturday or.
No, but I'd like to see him get a shot. I'd like touchdowns on every possession, sure. But
well, and you'd like to see Towns straighten things out.
Right.
But it just seems like that. You know, if anything, like that's for. I mean. Like, I was with Towns a year ago, you were talking about the same problem we were just saying with Gibbs.
Connor.
Where it's got plenty of leg and he's missing left or right. The field goal attempt on Saturday, and I know he got the turf and limped off, but that thing fell way short.
Yeah.
And some of the kicks haven't been going.
No, you're right. His kickoffs hadn't been traveling into the end zone, which was a little surprising.
Look, again, I would not slam the book shut on Towns as a kicker in college football, but I would think that he's probably third on the depth chart right now. You know, if he can come back 100%, like, you know what I mean, I know he was asked about him on Monday and said he's gonna be fine, looked to be okay in practice today, but yeah, he's
well. I could see it, as hard as you're having to try to kick the ball from 52, and you get a little turf. That could, yeah, that could strain the ankle a little bit.
Oh yeah. Oh no, and I'm sure that an injury scare is probably especially when you're talking about the feet and the ankles for kickers, like that's a really serious thing. So yeah, I just think with Towns, you hope it starts moving in the right direction.
All right, you were at practice. I didn't make it. I was hoping I'd be able to make it out there, but again in the recuperation here on the knee, I didn't get to sleep till it was almost dawn this morning, so I couldn't quite make it out. But it sounded like I don't know how much you watched of the sounded like the offense had a pretty good day, and Jackson Arnold sounded like he was really sharp.
Well, there was only a handful of like 1v1, like 11-on-11 sort of stuff that we got to see. A lot of it was sort of individual drills.
Right.
When they went live with some thump on ones versus ones, yeah, Jackson hit Horatio down the sideline for 40-plus yards in the air. I think Horatio gets pushed out. Uh-huh. Like pretty deep in the red zone, so it's not a touchdown, but it's a beautiful play down the sideline where Horatio.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people going, I don't know if Jackson Arnold's got the arm. You have not. Jackson
easy.
Arnold has
yeah.
the arm.
Easy. I mean, it was, and yeah, he's not straining to push it.
No.
35, 40 yards, and this thing was right on the money to Horatio Fields, who had gotten himself open. If anything, maybe Jackson lets it go a little bit earlier, and it's I think folks are also like, there have been times when it's okay, well. If he overthrows that, it's a touchdown. It still got there, but it was the receiver had to wait a little bit. He didn't have that on this Horatio field. Like it was right where it needed to be. And there was a sweep to Bryce Kane, who we saw a little bit more of when they got the twos involved. I think Cam Coleman scores the touchdown on that sequence, which was a nice play for Cam too. But the pass to Horatio was the star of the show. And then and then when you get with the twos, Bryce Kane had a nice little sweep.
Yeah, Malcolm was in a yellow jersey.
Malcolm's
right?
in a yellow jersey. Wonder if you see more Bryce Kane on Saturday because of that. It's been a quiet couple of weeks for Perry. Surprisingly quiet. You hope that's a situation where he's ready to go and can produce.
Caught a pass this past week
when he's called on. But it's something that I thought that maybe. Last week and this week were opportunities for Perry to build some momentum before Oklahoma. Look, right now it feels like there's a clear top three.
Oh, there's no – yeah, the top three definitely are Cam, Eric, and Horatio.
Yeah, and Malcolm's ready to step in for any of them and plays for Eric a lot, and he's the fourth guy when they go four wide. But it's those three, and maybe those aren't the three that everybody thought would be
your
top three receivers. But Horatio was brought in to compete, and all he's done every day.
He catches whatever anything near him, he catches.
8 for 8 on catching his 8 targets, 8 receptions this season for Horatio Fields.
You know, I'm wondering if Malcolm is not 100%. I wonder how the punt returns go. Because Malcolm's been the primary punt returner. I thought it was going to be Eric, and then I wondered if because of the deep thigh bruise, Malcolm then moved up.
Now, didn't they have – now, Eric was back there against Baylor some, right?
It yes, wasn't he just, was. Yeah, so I, early, but you know, last week it was Malcolm and then Bryce.
It was all Malcolm, yeah, and I wonder if with Eric's role on the offense, maybe they are reluctant to use him as punt returner too, I would think that Bryce would be in position to move up there. Mm-hmm. Didn't seem like Malcolm had the best day as a punt returner.
Too many balls are hitting
Saturday.
The ground.
Yeah.
Too many punts are hitting the ground.
You know, his
and that's something that Hugh Freeze has talked about. Catch it.
Yeah.
You know, catch it. Because if the ball hits the ground, it's usually not good. Because it's either gonna roll for a while, but there's a chance that it's gonna touch an offensive player.
He really needs to tracking the ball in the air needs to be a skill for Malcolm because he's so talented that he can get it. Like as a receiver, he can get himself open downfield. As a punt returner, he can get himself big play opportunities. But it all starts with finding that ball and catching it. And yes. I think there have been missed opportunities from Malcolm in that regard. And you and not to single him out in any way, because it's like the reason they feel like missed opportunities is because he seems like such a big play threat.
But I hold my breath every time the ball hits the ground. Then you've got guys you think Or are they going to try to short hop it now? They're going to try to pick it up onto the short hop and go, because that usually doesn't result in a positive, a positive play.
I mean, I don't want to blow the Bryce Kane thing out of proportion because it was the twos. I also thought that Amaris had a really nice play.
Read about that one.
Yeah, Amaris had a nice move as well. Pushed a lineman basically into deuce. It gets blown up before it gets ugly. But he got
a sack by pushing an offensive lineman.
Yeah, he's overwhelming. And but I think that like those receivers and you're seeing, I think Preston as a tight end sort of more it feels like when they use Frazier, it's multi tight end looks or special situations.
Yeah, Preston's more your pass.
Yeah, and maybe more like closer to your every down. Like I'd go ahead and call him the starter, but I think you're gonna still see plenty of Frazier. Seeing Champ Anthony out there with the club on, working with the twos and firing people up.
Yeah, it was Champ and Eric Winters.
Champ and Eric were back there.
I read everybody's reports.
Yeah, so it was Sylvester at the Star with Caleb and Jacquez as your primary safeties, which is the same starting lineup we've seen against Ball State.
Yep.
Champ, Eric, was it KLF, I think, was the star, too. I might have that wrong. But I know it was Champ and Eric were the safeties.
Yeah, where's Woodby's getting
I think
some
Woodby,
work.
Woodby would
moved,
be the
– looks like he's moved from corner, right?
Yeah, Woodby's also working inside. Maybe he's working instead of Ledour Faustin, but I thought it was KLF. But it could be one of those two guys. I think Auburn has plans to – and then a new boy figures somewhere in there as well. So I still think you're going to see – I guess the deeper we get into the season, I wonder how much it's sort of rotation based and how much it's they know these couple of players give them the best opportunity and those couple of players are going to be out there. Like, separation.
I still think you're going to see more than just the starters. I mean, I don't know that you'll see as much rotation.
If a couple of players separated themselves, right, as like, okay, these are clearly your best options at this spot and this spot and this spot, I wonder how much rotation would be the plan versus those guys being your primary options. I think it depends on sort of how much better are your starters than the next guy. Because it's tough to bring in.
It is, but it's also you got to be getting teams off the field. If you're out there and you're getting your defense is to 70 or more snaps, then it's really tough to have the same guys out there, the entire time. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love your thoughts, anything on your mind, sports-wise, as we continue here with the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Final few minutes of hour number one. Again, our thanks to Andy Burcham joining us for the first couple of segments. Once again, it's Tuesday, so that means at the bottom of hour number two, we're going to check in with Jake Crane of Crane & Company, get his thoughts on week two of college football. And as we head to week three, a pretty interesting lineup of games on tap for week three.
Oh, I think now that you're getting into some conference openers for different teams and some of the matchups we got this week, I mean, I think that as fun as last weekend was, it was light on ranked versus ranked games and conference games, mm-hmm. and you still had some drama and some surprises. But this Saturday looks to be positively loaded with quality matchups, including several SEC teams that are going to be hurting on Sunday if they can't take care of business in their matchup this week.
Yeah, I mean,
think about the Vandy South Carolina winner is in excellent position.
Well, if Florida doesn't figure some way to get off, bounce back, and it's going to. Hard to expect they're going to do that in Baton Rouge. But,
I still look at Arkansas as a total wild card, right? I mean, I have no idea.
Where are they? At Ole Miss?
They're at Ole Miss this Saturday, and I think they're better than the Kentucky team that just covered against Ole Miss in Lexington. But, I mean, we'll see what that means, right? I mean, it feels a little bit like Arkansas going to Auburn last year, where people were just pretty sure that they were multiple touchdowns worse, and they probably were, but they still won the game, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they still found a way to win, and You know, we've talked about Lane Kiffin not always handling teams.
Seeming to lose a game somewhere that he shouldn't.
I think Lane Kiffin and, to an extent, Hugh Freeze and, to an extent, Kalen DeBoer have developed reputations as coaches that can lose a, on paper, very winnable game.
There aren't many coaches these days that don't, though. You think about it.
Kirby.
That's what I said. There aren't many.
Yeah. I was going to say Kirby Smart usually wins those, but we'll see. That's another team. I mean, they've got Tennessee on Saturday.
Yes, they do. And I've said, Knoxville.
I mean, look, I do not think Tennessee. I do not think Georgia is necessarily going undefeated against Tennessee and Alabama and Auburn.
No, but I wouldn't be shocked if they play their best ball game up there in Knoxville. That's a really exciting one. All right, we've got to get to our top of the hour break. Halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. Come on in and join us for hour number two, which is coming up.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this nice-looking Tuesday afternoon. It's Bill and Dan here in the studio on this Tuesday. Drew with the afternoon off, so Dan is at the controls. So, you can talk to him when you call in, but he's going to quickly put you on hold.
Yeah, try not to. Well, I guess you can call in anyway. 334-321-1390.
You can talk, then you can go into more detail after we bring you up on the air.
Yeah, I'm just going to quickly put you on hold, though. But it's great to be back in the studio. Like you said, we've done the show on the road a couple days in a row.
We're going to be back out again this week, right?
That's right. Got the okay from our pals at Sky Bar. We'll be back there on Thursday getting your homecoming weekend game day started. Oh, yeah. You know, it's going
to
be a
need to be
a lot
there
fun.
Thursday since it's a you know morning start since it's an early start on
oh,
Saturday.
Oh yeah, no, I think I suspect people will still make it out on Friday night early start on Saturday. But
on that Friday night, I mean Saturday morning is just an extension of Friday night anyway.
And so. then I'm sure Saturday post game will be just sheer madness with Auburn ending the game so early on a Saturday and just having the rest of the day.
You know, what's crazy is, I mean, I was hearing Doug talking about this. I mean, Auburn, Alabama, Troy, all play it early.
Yeah,
all playing early on Saturday morning.
So you get your game done, and then you're watching. You know,
you got
sort of
whatever on tap. For
I guess
the rest of the day.
South Alabama also getting their game done early, right?
That's because because they're playing Auburn.
Auburn's opponent for the first time. I mean, we remember was it June Jones? Right back in the day when they started that program. Remember we'll talk to Jake Crane
South?
About it. Yeah, remember I mean didn't they go real early with South Alabama's football history is relatively
it's not terribly old.
No, I mean
I didn't remember June Jones. I remember June Jones. I didn't remember him. At South
Joey
Alabama.
Jones, not June
Joey
Jones.
Jones. It was yes, Joey former Jones. Alabama receiver.
June Jones was the Hawaii coach.
Yes.
Joey
yes.
Jones was the Alabama receiver yes. who started at South Alabama.
He's from Mobile.
Inaugural football coach there, and then they've gone with it was Steve Campbell, Kane Womack, now Major Applewhite. But no, we remember when both South Alabama and Georgia State. I mean, those programs went from. I mean, those were schools that did not have football. It's not like they worked their way up, right? I mean, these are programs that decided
they started and jumped right in there.
We're starting football programs. We're going to be in the bowl subdivision, and I mean, it's not even a novelty. You know, 15, 20 years later, these are solid group of five programs and in talent rich areas, right? I mean, it would make sense that there's going to be enough. There's going to be enough there to.
And they started in 2008, moved to the FBS by 2012. So,
yeah, I mean.
you know, they're less than 15 years in FBS.
And they've had some, like you said, they've had some big wins. Went to Oklahoma State 2 years ago and had a
and beat and yeah, beat them soundly,
crushed them. And so I mean they've done some impressive things, and it's got a little bit of Troy's Larry Blakeney sort mm-hmm. of approach, right, where it can be an island of misfit toys for. It can be, you know, cast-offs. It can be guys getting a second or third or fourth chance in college football who did not start at the mid-major Group of Five level. And at South yeah. Alabama, they've got some they got some impressive players.
Yeah, Andy mentioned their running back as an Ole Miss transfer yeah. who's run for better than 100 yards a game.
I was watching Troy this weekend against Clemson. And Garner Langlo is one of the starting tackles. He picked up a couple of penalties in the Clemson game. But he's former Auburn signee, former Auburn player. I mean, it's cool to see some of those. Of course, we talked about Tyler Scott earlier this year, yeah. making his presence felt against Ole Miss in the pregame. But yeah, always cool to see some of those names resurface around college football. And like Andy said, we've heard this for a while. That and in some, you know, some folks would even say it's the downside of playing a program like South Alabama if you're Auburn, you know, playing a smaller in-state school, is that you're going to have some South Alabama players that might be, you know, this could be
extremely motivated because they feel like they were spurned,
yeah,
you know, by the bigger school or something.
This is
like
a bigger this is a bigger game than
this
than
game
your
means
average
so much to most of those players.
Yes, as opposed to a run-of-the-mill non-conference game or even another paycheck game.
Right, a lot of those would just come in and go, okay, yeah, we're going to get a paycheck, we're going to go out and they'll play hard, but it means even more to these in-state, because they're down there in Mobile now. It's not like, of course, it's not like the old days where the newspaper's out and the stories are about Alabama and Auburn and South is on page two.
No.
Because newspapers aren't around like they were, but I mean, still the talk, the talk radio and stuff. South's not getting the talk that Alabama and Auburn are, and those guys feel like, hey, we've got something that we want people to talk about us.
I'm sure in there, you know, walking around campus for those guys, they'll see South students and Alabama stuff and Auburn stuff,
oh, yeah,
right?
You know
it's even in their own classes, even their own buildings, and yeah, it's a big opportunity for somebody like that, you know, who and they're probably, even as college football's not as local, as regional as it used to be roster wise, mm-hmm. you have players from everywhere. I bet you there are some guys on South Alabama that knew Perry. I bet you there are some guys.
I mean, think of these South Alabama players that Auburn had, players from that area of yeah. the state. I'm yeah. not talking University of South Alabama, but I mean, you know, Mobile and Baldwin counties and, you know, places like that.
They've recruited Montgomery. I'm sure there are some guys mm-hmm. who know Malik and Keldrick and Jeremiah. Like, I think there's probably, you know, there are some, I mean, some of the biggest players on this Auburn team are in-state prospects, guys who succeeded in Alabama high school football, and South Alabama's got the same. You know, they could say the same thing. You know, they've got some heavy hitters. Caleb, right, is from Caleb's coming out of Thompson. You've got some regional ties there on the South Alabama roster. So that's going to be.
They've got a lot of transfers too.
I would believe it.
They have a lot of transfers. I'm going down. It's like. Mississippi State, Ole Miss, yeah. Arkansas State, Oklahoma State, Utah State, Georgia Tech. I mean, just
wouldn't you be tempted at the Group of Five level to fish out of the portal as much as you can and
sure.
see what you can get from? Because if you, I mean, that's one where if you gamble right on a guy that started his career in the SEC, you could have an impact player and someone that just nobody has an answer for in the mm-hmm. conference potentially at different spots. I've seen that in – I mean, it's even more apparent when you get to, like, mid-major basketball because one player can make such a huge difference. But even in football, that's the case. So I think, that adds a little bit – I mean, it's still a game where you would hope Auburn can make can build a multiple possession lead.
Oh, wow. I did not realize that – somebody on the South Alabama roster, Bubba Thompson, the former outstanding dual sport athlete that Auburn High saw from McGill, who played Major League Baseball, played professional baseball for quite a while. Yep. Bubba Thompson is on the South Alabama roster. So I had not realized that.
No, that's very cool. I mean, we remember when he was he with the Reds?
He was with the Reds.
Yeah,
and the Reds and Rangers.
I mean, he was with the Reds last season, wasn't he? He's like he retired.
Yes, he was
retired right after last season. Is he playing for? Like, is he getting?
I don't know. He's a PT freshman. For... He's a freshman there at South. I'm not really sure. I'm just looking at the roster right now. He's a quarterback, so he isn't playing right now because I mean their quarterbacks put up really
That's
good numbers
cool.
here. Davenport's
did,
put up really good
did
numbers.
Did Winkie make the majors as a baseball player and then come back to football?
I don't know that he made the majors. Okay. He was just in the minors.
Because we've talked about
Bubba Thompson made the majors.
Yeah, Bubba Thompson was a Major League Baseball player that came back to college football. We got Brett on the on the phone, Bill.
Yeah, let's get to the drive hotline then. Hey, Brett.
Hey guys, in the game this past Saturday, did Auburn give up 3 sacks? Is that how many they gave up?
4, I think, is what the official stats had.
Was it 3? Jackson was sacked 3 times, right?
Yeah.
Oh, and Deuce was sacked once, I guess.
Yes.
Okay, I missed that one. I know Mason Murphy got whipped on 1 of the sacks. Who would y'all say got beat on the other two? I wasn't able.
Well, did it come from each side? I thought it did. Yeah, I thought there was maybe one from each side. I don't want to necessarily assume that it was just the tackle because guys could be a missed coverage or something. But it felt like it was. I thought both sacks came from each side of the field.
So. Mason Murphy got beat once, and you're saying the tackle got beat.
I would think X would have been the other one. I think of it again. I should go back and watch before I give you an answer here on where the sacks actually came from.
Seems like I remember one of them. I went back and watched on the TV.
Didn't Murphy
or a replay, whatever. I believe they said that the guy on the TV said that Lou. Got beat.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought there was like either a linebacker or a somebody blitzing one time that came up the middle that forced, I didn't know if he got the sack, but sort of forced it.
Yeah, doesn't it seem to y'all that right tackle is our weakest position on the offensive line?
Maybe. I don't know how they've graded thus far, but I think that I still think they feel that Mason's the best guy they have out there. I think they really like moving too tall inside.
I mean, I think the performance looks better after Baylor was able to harass SMU a little bit, although SMU still had quite a few yards in the victory on Saturday. I think it's early to sort of identify a weak spot on the offensive line. I do think it's interesting that. You're not seeing too tall go in for Miller and for X and Miller as much. You're seeing him go in.
He's going in and playing guard.
Yeah. And I thought that if they weren't happy with what either tackle were giving, they could swap either of them out for too tall Miller. Instead, you're seeing him a lot more at guard.
Yeah. Have y'all seen any of the grades for? The offensive lineman in the first 2 games.
Saw him in the first game. I think everybody graded above, which wasn't bad. I mean, I think everybody graded above 60, according to PFF in the first game, which was winning football, and that included some of the pressures they allowed. But I think they graded pretty well. Have not seen the grades from this past week against Ball State.
Okay. All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right, Brett. Good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. That is the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
And Auburn's had enough seasons in a row where tackle has been a concern and even at times a huge problem. So I can understand why folks are hyper focused on making sure that Miller and Chaplin are delivering sort of as advertised, and again
Murphy and Chaplin.
Murphy and Chaplin, yeah. So I would think that it's important, and that's I can get why people are you know, really, really concerned. The fact that you don't go to Miller as an option off the bench, like at tackle,
yeah, I think tells you that they feel like that's the best option they have right now.
Or
is that combo?
Or those are guys who need, or they think those guys need more reps, right?
It's interesting. I mean, in this past week, I mean, Auburn then went more to the quick passing game, and there are people, you know, wanting to see Auburn throw it down the field. But again, I like the fact that through the first two games, they've really taken what the defense has given them and been able to get some. But they're going to need to throw the ball downfield. They're going to need to try to stretch it some, but it doesn't need to be in obvious third and long or situations sort of like that.
And I do think it's important for the tackles to – I mean, it's important for the entire offensive line to hold up, but the tackles especially because, I mean, Hugh has the option to keep tight ends at home or keep running backs at home, but every time you do that, you pull an eligible receiver off the board. And I think this offense wants to have as many options, as many weapons out there as they possibly can. And the more you think you can block everybody with five and not have to keep tight ends and running backs at home to help out, the more dangerous this offense is going to be, the more often you have to keep tight ends and running backs home to help block.
Right.
I think the more limited this, you know, you sort of have to, now you're fighting with one hand tied behind your back because you don't have the full allotment, the full assortment of your eligible receivers.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, again, I don't look. It's still we're going into game three. I think the offense, in reality, I think the offense has been every bit as good, and maybe a little better than some people thought it would be early on.
No, I've been enthused about a lot of different spots of this offense, and I was sort of cautioning folks before the Baylor game. Like sometimes these things take time.
Yeah.
Sometimes these offenses, when you have as many new pieces as Auburn has on offense,
expecting them to click, you know, immediately is usually unrealistic.
And you're seeing some offenses around college football with a lot of good pieces that haven't necessarily clicked into place quite yet, especially against major conference competition the way Auburn did against Baylor. So no, I think things look pretty good, and I'm especially enthused with what I view as, and it stuck out to me the first practice we got to go to when Jackson was out there, his ability to quickly diagnose and decide, okay, I need to bail out, or I need to get rid of the ball, or I need to improvise. Like, I think that his ability to quickly recognize the situation and make...
Well, I think his decision-making's been fine.
Yeah, I think the fact... And on time, which is something you haven't necessarily seen from Auburn's offense in a couple of years.
Yep. All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. Don't forget, coming at the bottom of the hour, Jake Crane of Crane & Company. In the meantime, we'll get to as many phone calls as we can. 334-321-1390 as we get to our first break here in hour number two on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
Jonathan here with University Ace Hardware. At University Ace, we make renting easy. Pick up a pressure washer, grab the right cleaner, and get expert advice all in one trip. Not sure what you need? Our team is here to help, guaranteeing that you leave with everything required to get the job done right. From chainsaws and dingoes to lifts, zero-turn mowers, and much more. Rent for 4 hours a day, a week, or even a month. Whatever fits your project. Skip the extra trips and rent local. Visit University Ace Hardware today, next to the movie theater in Auburn.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and let's get to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Brian is up next. Hey, Brian.
Hey, guys. Just a caveat, or just to add on to what you all were saying, too. I mean, I think if you look across the league, everybody that had bigger games the starting weekend had a little bit of a letdown against lesser opponents this week. I mean, Tennessee didn't look outstanding, trying to think of the other bigger games. LSU, I don't think, looked all that great.
No, you're right.
So I think you're 100% accurate in the fact that, look, we're still growing. I mean, we're still going to have some growing pains. And, I mean, yeah, we didn't cover the spread, but I don't care about that. I mean, we looked the way we should against an overmatched opponent. So,
But, I mean, there were a couple of miscues that kept the game from being like a no hitter. But I think otherwise,
the officials had a couple of them too.
The officiating is horrible south as usual in the SEC. I've seen some wailing and gnashing of teeth on the message boards, which of course we all know those are useless. But have you guys really talked about Deuce at all and his performance?
No, not really. I mean, I just said, look, he looked like a freshman.
Yeah.
I mean, and for people to be a little surprised that he wasn't just fabulous his first time out. Look, I mean, that is his first collegiate action. And, he got in there, and I'm sure he wanted to make huge plays. And as a result, I mean, he had too much on a pass. I mean, he threw one that could have been a pick six. He had a bobble. I mean, I'm not ready to toss him to the trash pile. But, I mean, it's crazy how some people just look at that and go, well, that's it. Well, he's overrated.
Well, I mean, we had people last week. Go ahead, Brian.
I was just going to add, sorry, Dan. I think, too, correct me if I'm wrong on this guy, but wasn't he playing with the second-team offensive line and, like, all the backup receivers and stuff?
Yeah,
like
he was,
that?
But so, he, I was, mean, a, like he was playing against, he was playing against some of Ball State's backup guys, too, though.
I gotcha. I was just going to add, I'd love to see him, like, play with our starters at some point, hopefully maybe this week, to just to see, too, what he can do out there. Because I thought it was his nervousness showed, obviously. But, yeah, just I think people have to take that all into consideration, too.
I think, you know, and I know Jackson's new, too, but there's also, like, Toy Story here. There's this belief that the freshman is the shiny new toy, and he's got untapped potential, and people want to believe. I mean, I'm sure there were folks who really wanted to believe before the game on Saturday that Deuce still gives Auburn a better chance to win right now than Jackson does. And you saw, and certainly if you were of that opinion, you took a big punch to the stomach on Saturday, because it looked to be, the difference between the two of them looked to be considerable right now. But that doesn't mean Deuce Knight can't be a good college quarterback someday, and maybe someday very soon. I think some of that is, there was a lot of excitement over this brand new toy, and then it turns out he looked like a promising true freshman quarterback, which is something that we've seen a lot of it, and sometimes it pans out, and sometimes it ends up fizzling.
Well, it just makes you really think about how good Bo Nix was, man. Mm-hmm. I just, that guy just got a lot of crap from a lot of our fans.
Yeah, as a freshman, he was pretty darn good.
From the
get-go.
Bo, and to an extent, this Trent Seaborn character, though. Like, when you tell me that an eighth grader is playing 6A Alabama,
7A
Alabama,
winning a state title.
I mean, I've asked players and gotten different answers here, where it's like, what do you think is a tougher jump? Being an eighth grader on the field playing quarterback in like 7A Alabama high school playoff games versus being someone who played 7A football for a long time and then jumps to like the mid-major level of college football, the G5. Like, it's a significant jump to come to college football, but Bo Nix and Seaborn are probably examples of guys that have already made a mind-boggling jump in what they've been able to do at a young age, and it maybe shouldn't have been as surprising. And Bo Nix has also put together a fantastic rookie season as an NFL quarterback. Like, this guy keeps jumping levels and making it seem like it's no big deal.
Yeah. All right, well, I know you guys got a lot on the plate, so that's all I got, but thanks for taking the call.
Good hearing from you, Brian. Appreciate the call. 3-3. I mean, if he gets more opportunities and continues at that pace, then it's like, well, he's got some growing.
And maybe it was a sign too when Hugh Freeze started talking about Ashton Daniels being the guy that they would lean on as the quarterback if something happened to Jackson. You know, the comments about using Ashton strategically this year because if Jackson
stays healthy, then Deuce is the guy that would come in second. And you have to listen to that and understand that means if something were to happen to Jackson, then it would probably be Ashton.
If there were a longer-term absence, maybe right. Ashton's in better position to lead the team
now. He's a guy that's been in college football for
as someone who is
his fourth year in college.
Someone who started ACC games last year than a true freshman. And again, that doesn't mean that Deuce Knight couldn't be a really there are Lenore Sellers and Nico put together fantastic seasons as redshirt freshmen last year. We're seeing second year, third year guys who waited. And then got their chance take a big jump in college football. I think you saw a lot of stuff that reminds you he's a freshman. Let's go blind to the let's call it caller. You're on the air.
We have a caller. Hey, go ahead. Who have we got?
Hey guys, it's John in Auburn.
Hey John,
had a couple quick thoughts, just super quick. I feel like in college football now, and I don't know if it's a recent phenomenon, that we take the unproven commodity more often than not than we do somebody who had maybe a year of starting experience and had a B or C level experience. Had Jackson Arnold not played at Oklahoma, I think the asking price and the bidders for him would have been a list off the charts. And I feel like the way maybe NIL, maybe social media, I feel like the way that construct is, it's just a little bit off. I think experience is just invaluable. And a second point to that, just super quick, is, look, Jason Campbell at Auburn, his freshman year was very rocky, if memory serves, and audibling in and out of plays. I remember Lamar Jackson playing against us in his debut, threw an awful interception off his back foot on the first play of his college career. So I don't think we can just snap and have these guys be – college ready.
Some good points there. I mean, I guess it's just sort of human nature that when there's somebody coming along that you haven't seen and you've heard great things about them, the feeling is, well, man, maybe they're going to be the greatest thing. And you've seen some things from Jackson. You'd seen some things from Jackson Arnold last year. Some good, some not so good. Where people are. They're hoping that you're going to get someone who is just great and never makes mistakes, but that's not going to happen.
I think there's less patience than ever before at that position too, John, because there's the belief that you can go get an answer every season in the portal, right? So it's like if you're not succeeding at that position, then it suddenly is. We recruited a guy that we're really excited about, and it's going to take him a couple of years. And behind him,
if it doesn't work out quick, let's go get somebody better.
Yeah, why didn't you go get somebody better this December? And some coaches in college football are having to answer that question right now, and we'll have to answer that question over the next couple of weeks if their bet did not pay off. I think for Auburn so far, they were shopping at the top of the market in the portal. For someone like Jackson Arnold, and so far I think they have to be pretty happy with what they've gotten.
I agree. And last thing, super quick, is I think a lot of the Mateer hype is honestly because he and Cam Ward both came from Washington State.
Well, Mateer put up pretty good numbers.
Yeah, you know what? I think it was hype. He made some plays against Michigan. I agree. I mean, it's still you want to see what it looks like against SEC teams, but. I think that there's his numbers were very impressive. I think you're probably onto something that the fact that he came from the same school as Cam Ward has people thinking maybe he could have a Cam Ward style effect. I think people love that he brought the offensive coordinator with him too, right? It's a little bit different when it's a quarterback learning a new look. We've seen quarterbacks try to learn new systems who had big seasons the year before and it doesn't work. The fact that you bring an offensive, a mind like Arbuckle along with a talent like Mateer, I think if they look good against Auburn, they've got a chance to make some noise and have a pretty good win-loss record before they play Texas.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate it, John. Need to get to our bottom of the hour break, and then we'll catch up with Jake Crane of Crane & Company on the other side. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
With Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we're going to head to the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our regular Tuesday afternoon guest, our good friend from Crane & Company, and that is Jake Crane. Jake, how you doing today, man?
I think no football tonight, which is kind of lame, but I got a couple days, and it gears right back up. And I tell you, this weekend, there's some big ones on the slate that I'm excited to see if some teams can continue to play the way they're playing or if somebody kind of comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. There's some interesting ones. Before we get into those, thoughts on this past weekend. My goodness, we were talking about the what-ifs. Didn't really know that it was going to happen. I don't know that South Florida can do it for a third straight time, but that was a painful loss for Gator fans last week at home to South Florida.
Well, it's, you know, it's kind of like the Fast and the Furious movies. Like, we it's the same plot every single time. We all know what's going to happen. It's almost like watching Penn State be really good for 10 games against inferior opponents and then lose the ones that matter the most. But, I mean, this is what Billy's done at Florida. The only problem this time is all that equity you built up last year with the way they ended it because of DJ Lagway and not wanting to fire Billy because they're attached at the hip. Well, now you have DJ Lagway. This was supposed to stop happening, and just the way it happened. You know, I said the best bet on the board last week was South Florida's total team points under 20.5, and it hit, and Florida still lost.
Which
is just insane. But, guys, allowing South Florida to complete passes 5 yards and underneath, the amount of now screens and the way that Florida just totally – didn't take advantage of the single dimension that is the South Florida offense. I mean, just add another one to the list of Billy screw-ups. Then you spit on a guy. It's amazing how they keep doing this early in the year.
And that's a Florida team, too, that, you know, I mean, they've got 10 straight against major conference opponents starting this week with the LSU game. I mean, it's
and they're only favored in three of them. And one of those three, for some reason, they're favored over Florida State right now. It's tough to see a winning record for the Gators.
Yeah, I mean, if it keeps going this way, they lose to LSU. There's a couple of players on that Florida roster that better start learning the creed.
Yeah, I think that things could slip away really quickly.
You want to talk about a piranha show on a roster?
Yeah.
Let Billy Napier get fired and watch what happens during the intermingling of that.
Again, yeah, watch what happens, you know, as that – I mean, it would be, I think, reminiscent of A&M post-Jimbo as far as the kind of feeding frenzy.
That's a good comp.
We'd be talking about the kind of talent that would be suddenly on the board. And yeah, Jake, I think there are – this week, it just stands out how many high quality SEC matchups there are. I mean around college football, big time matchups, but the SEC's got some monster ones on the board this week. Is there a game in particular you're looking forward to?
Man, I tell you, I could sit here and be obvious and say, you know, Georgia, Tennessee, right, and Florida, LSU. That Vandy at South Carolina game, I'm not touching it from a betting standpoint, but that one is really, really interesting, especially when you look at the way that South Carolina struggled with Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
And then what Vanderbilt did to Virginia Tech in the second half of that game. I mean, you roll up 300 yards and beat them 34-0 at their place in the second half of a tight game. This Vandy team is there, and they're making big time plays. Like, if you watch Vandy, they are not making plays that Vandy made in the past. And I'm not as sold on South Carolina as a lot of people are. I know they're top 10 right now, but there's some holes on that team, including the offensive line. And Vandy just outlasts you, man. They don't beat themselves; they just outlast you. That one could get interesting in Columbia really quickly.
Oh, I agree. I agree with you 100% on that. I'm not sold on South Carolina as a top 10 team. I love Lenore Sellers. I just don't know about that whole team. But you're right. I mean, it's hard to believe Vandy's not a top 25 team right now. But they've got a really good chance of being one next week.
I think they got a chance to break into the top 25. And the other team, total wild card. I mean, I think we learned a lot about Arkansas in Oxford on Saturday going to play Ole Miss, and that's a team that if they can win that one, they're 3-0 and probably deserving of some votes to jump into the top 25. But they would have to beat Lane Kiffin and an Ole Miss team that they win, but I don't think they dominated the way folks were expecting against Kentucky.
Well, look, I mean, and look, say what you want about Kentucky, and we've had our fun at their expense over at Crane & Company when it comes to football. I mean, they're going to put a good defensive product out on the field. And, you know, this is Austin Simmons, kind of his first true bite at the apple as the guy on the road in an SEC game, albeit Kentucky. But the way he was able to bounce back, I think, it, you know, throwing those two picks early, I just, Arkansas defensively, I don't know if they can do it. Like I think Taylen Green could bust a couple, make a couple chaos plays, but just consistently for four quarters on the road. I'm going to tell you the team who I think looks dangerous is Missouri. Like, if Bo Prabula can throw the ball just like he's throwing it, like it's, and I thought, I mean, he was 30 of 39 the other day and made some big-time throws. If he can throw it like that, with that running ability they have with him and those two backs, Ahmad Hardy and the Roberts kid, and then you got Coleman at wide receiver, not the best one, but one of the best Colemans in the SEC. That Missouri defense can run. Like, they're sneaky. Don't be shocked if you look up at Missouri's like 5-0 or something.
Yeah, well, they got their first six. If they're 5-0, that means they're 5-0 hosting Bama to go 6-0 before they go on the road for their first road game against Auburn.
Yeah, and I mean, look, at the end of the day, if you're Auburn, you want Missouri to do well and look good coming in a game that you feel like, you know, when we circled games, you know, you thought your roster was equal to or better than, you know, Missouri was one of them in league play. But again, if Prabula keeps playing like this and he's able to operate the offense like that, that becomes a totally different Missouri team and a totally different problem to contend with.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Saturday night on NBC. We don't talk about the NBC game very often here on this show.
But you don't get many SEC teams playing at Notre Dame.
That's right. Texas A&M, Mike Elko and company, they go to South Bend. Look, Notre Dame, if Notre Dame loses this one, then suddenly they're – oh, I mean, look, it was a tough schedule with Miami and A&M as your first two. But you lose this one, I mean, yeah. I think the path for a 9-3 Notre Dame team to make the playoffs is kind of bumpy. They may be in desperation mode with this one. Feels like a must win if Notre Dame wants to make the college football playoff. It's an A&M team with something to prove too.
Look, if you lose this one in your Notre Dame, you have to rely on other people to make the playoff.
Yep.
I think you totally lose control of your own destiny because you know an 11-1 Notre Dame team is going to get in. A 10-2 Notre Dame team, now that Boise State lost, right, and early to USF, you know, they got USC on the schedule, but you look at that schedule, it's like, where are the key wins for you to get in over a 9-3, you know, Texas team or somebody like that? I'm going to be interested to see if they drop this one, which I think they will. I like A&M in this game. I like the over, guys, at 49.5. Typically, I'd be on the under when you have these two teams, but I haven't been impressed with A&M's defense, and I don't think Notre Dame's front seven is good enough to sit there and play man the way that they play him against Casey Concepcion and some of the guys that A&M has on the outside.
Marcell Reed can play too, right?
Dan, that's why I said all offseason, why is nobody talking about this guy?
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about DJ Lagway and Lenoris Sellers and Arch Manning and all this stuff. Nobody's talking about Marcell Reed, who wasn't even ready to play last year and came in and did yeoman's work with his first start on the road at the Swamp where he won it. Like, I would much rather face DJ Lagway than Marcell Reed right now.
And I think, Marcell Reed has a couple opportunities to show you show you that he's that kind of player. And this one on Saturday, I mean, it's because A&M's beaten two pretty overmatched opponents. Like this
For
is
sure.
you go to Notre Dame coming off of a loss and a bye week. Like that's where I mean right yeah. that's what we're doing with Notre Dame right now. It's like this is a what a win this would be for A&M. Jumping into SEC play.
Well, it'd be huge, and you bring up a good point. I mean, you're basically facing a criminally insane person that's been in solitary for a week and 5 days. Like, all they've had is been able to sit there and think about that loss at Miami. I mean, I would say the same thing. If you're an LSU fan, you didn't want South Florida to beat Florida. You wanted Florida to beat South Florida because now your back's against the wall, and you may get the best version of that team. So if you're A&M, I mean, you knew it was going to be tough going up there, but, I mean, at the end of the day, their back's up against the wall. This would be a quality win that they really have to have. But at some point, A&M's got to be able to look at all the people that point and say, you can't win the big one, you can't win the big one, and go win the big one.
Yep, that's right. They've got to, you know, put up or shut up. Hey. You mentioned No, go ahead.
I was going to say, Jake, how about the dad from Young Sheldon, Jeff Lebby, getting the win over Arizona? I mean, I really want to see it work with Jeff Lebby.
Yeah.
And I just love it for that program, getting a win like that. And you look at their schedule, and suddenly Tennessee could be walking into a trap in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, well, listen, again, if you watch our show or listen to our show, this is one we've been calling since the summer. I liked Mississippi State in this game. They tried to blow it, and un-Mississippi State-like, they unblew it. Like, I thought once Arizona State went up, I was like, well, you know, it was tight. They're not going to be able to do it. And then obviously they go down and hit that big play when Arizona State was in zero. But, yeah, look, Levy's a really good play caller. Those guys play really hard for him. And they smelled blood in the water early, but the biggest compliment I think you can give them is a team that lost a lot of games last year, including games where they played well early. Adversity hit them really late in this one, and they were able to respond. Mm-hmm. Just what that does to your team is invaluable. You can't measure it and should give them confidence going forward. Guys, I had them starting out 4-0 and then losing every game after that. So it's going to fall off a cliff probably at some point. But, man, this is one you can build on in recruiting and throw some red meat to the fan base that there's improvements that have already been made.
Well, they may have a shot in Gainesville, just depending on how things go with the Gators.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. at the point where Florida, if it does fall off the cliff, I mean, it's going to change a lot of outlooks on teams that are playing them. But we'll see. Look, Florida, y'all know how college football is. Florida may go down there and beat LSU this weekend.
Yeah, they may.
And then all of a sudden it's, hey, you know, it was one mistake. You know, give me another chance and look what we did. And then all of a sudden Brian Kelly can't coach anymore. Like, it's just amazing how that flips so quick.
Yeah, well, that sort of leads into that Georgia-Tennessee game that you were saying it's obvious that's the one you're looking at. And right now Vol fans are just going crazy. They've scored 117 points in their first two games. And look at Georgia. Georgia's struggling offensively. Tennessee ought to win this one big, right? I'm not so sure about that.
No, I love Georgia in this game. And you know what's funny? If you actually go watch Kirby in these non-conferences, they never beat any bad team like they're supposed to beat them. I remember there was one year they struggled with, like, Kent State and Tennessee Tech. And
not
then,
since,
like, went and
not
beat,
since
like,
they played
three
Bo.
Top five teams in a row.
Not since they played Bo in Oregon, right? It was the last time they beat a team like they were supposed to in non-conference play.
For sure. Like, they'll beat Austin Peay 28-6, and they'll go beat Tennessee by 24 this Saturday. It's just – That's the way it works when you're dealing with human beings. Here's the problem. And everybody's been like, oh, well, look, Tennessee's starting corners are going to be out for this game, and McCoy hadn't played yet. Yeah, that ain't Tennessee's biggest problem. The biggest problem is they're not deep on the defensive line, and they got really beat up against Syracuse. And Georgia, say what you want about what they've lost. You know what they look exactly like? They look like Georgia. They're huge. They're huge. Offensive line's huge. I just feel like gravity in this one. You know, at the end of the day, you don't have to be the best quarterback in the world if the run game's good. And then Tennessee offensively, does Joey Aguilar try and become the magician in this game and it gets them in trouble? He's able to sit back there and just throw it up when they're playing East Tennessee State and one of their guys will go get it. You do that against Georgia, one of their guys is going to go get it and he's going to run it all the way back. So I like Georgia in this one just because of the line of scrimmage. Tennessee will fight. And I think it'll be close in the first half. But, you know, gravity is a real thing. It just keeps smushing you until you're 80 years old and you're almost, you know, basically bent over.
How important is the fact that it's Gunnar Stockton's first road game? Because that's something we've seen in the past where, I mean, Carson Beck's first road game was at Auburn 2 years ago, and he really struggled in that matchup. It's an important test for a young quarterback with a lot on his shoulders.
It is, but Gunnar Stockton got some weird on-the-job experience. Like, he was, like, working with the heart surgeon, and the guy passed out during the middle of open heart surgery, and he had to do it. Like, Gunnar Stockton went in and played at the most important time of year, so I don't think he's going to be as overwhelmed as some other guys. Like, you know, Bryce Underwood going to Oklahoma and having to deal with that, and even Arch with the sample size that he had. He didn't have to be the guy in a big game for them, and then you go on the road to Ohio State. I just, again, you want the best way to settle a green quarterback down is to get him that run game and live in second and six, and then all of a sudden the coverage starts getting skinny. And I'm telling you, Zachariah Branch a problem. I mean, we can make fun of Georgia wide receivers all you want. This guy's a problem. I like Georgia to cover and beat Tennessee.
quickly. I mean, Auburn should beat South. You know an awful lot about the Jags. What does Auburn need to do this week? What are you looking for them to do to try to continue to improve?
Just clean football. Again, just whether it's South Alabama or South Carolina, it's about you as a team and improving on things that you need to improve on. And then again, you know, all these people that are like, oh, well, you're playing an inferior team, so just go and throw it a bunch of times and do that. That's not what this is. Like, you don't go into a game and do that. You call what's best for the look you're getting. You don't want to get in a it's such a bad habit to form trying to put a square peg in a round hole just to do it. That's why I thought the win at Baylor was so impressive, because the defense was telling you what you need to do, and you did it, and you stuck with it. If South Alabama is going to do the same thing, you make them pay for it. You are in the business of calling smart plays in advantageous situations. You're not in the business of calling plays just to call plays. That there's a reason fans don't call plays. They don't need to call plays. You need to look at what you're given. Call what's there. That's a great habit to get into. It clears up the reads. This is what we're looking for. This is what we got. This is what we're doing. That's what Auburn needs to do and continue to improve tackling. I thought the officiating was horrible against Ball State, especially in the second half. What an absolute joke. But control what you can control. Go play your best game.
Great stuff as usual. Jake, let everybody know what's coming up on Crane & Company.
Yeah, look, we had our first new college football playoff rankings starting this week. We put out today, talked some Auburn in there, believe it or not. Didn't think I'd be saying that for a while. Tomorrow we're going to be making our week three picks with David Pollack. And Sunday we're going to be getting out that Auburn-Oklahoma preview pretty early. Should be a huge one. Glad it's at 2:30. But if Auburn can go find a way to split at Oklahoma and at A&M, there could be some big things coming down the pipe.
No question. Great stuff, Jake. Thanks a lot, man. Have a great week.
All right. Y'all be good.
See you, buddy.
All right. We'll get to our final break. Back to wrap it up here on the Tuesday Drive.
This is Lee County Revenue Commissioner Olene Price. When we have the opportunity to...
You're live on the Drive.
And that means we are out of time. Yep, you're live, but we are out of time. Our thanks to Jake Crane of Crane & Company joining us this hour. Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, in hour number one. That's going to do it for the Tuesday Drive. Tomorrow, the Wednesday Drive, Jason Caldwell from Auburn Undercover will join us.
Saw him at a red light as I was driving here to the show today, as a matter of fact. Excited to see him again tomorrow. Our good buddy JC.
Yeah, we'll look forward to talking with him, and we'd love to hear from you as well on the Wednesday edition of The Drive. That's going to do it for today, though. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.